Hey everybody, I'm still on the road. Golden Retriever of Comedy Tour it's in the final stretch. We're in the home stretch. If you're in Charlotte, we're there this Friday. If you're in Durham, we're there Saturday. And then we're coming to Munhall, Pennsylvania. We're coming to Cleveland, Ohio, to Columbus, Ohio, to Iowa, if you live near the Grand Falls Casino. Those are the final dates of the Golden Retriever of Comedy Tour. It's going on right now. DanSoder.com for all tickets. Come see the show, and then we're recording this in June. More info on that coming shortly. But DanSoder.com, I promise you, once the tour is done, you're not going to be seeing a lot of this pushing it on you. You know, we're going to be going back to clubs to work on the new hour, which announcing soon. That'll be fun. Come see me with a notepad, bum my off. But right now, DanSoder.com, Golden Retriever of Comedy Tour. I love this hour. I've been having so much fun on the road with it. Netflix is a joke festival. I know Los Angeles, I was just there doing an hour in the fall. So Netflix is a joke was like, hey, come out, do a show. What do you want to do? Well, here's what I want to do. I want to watch a movie with Tim Dillon and make fun of it in front of an audience. One of those, remember those movie watch-alongs we were doing at the beginning of the tour? Doing a live one. Los Angeles, May 6th at the Agora, 9 o'clock. DanSoder.com for tickets. Come watch me and Tim Dillon watch a very fun movie, which we're still trying to get cleared. But if we get it cleared, it's going to be very funny. We're going to make fun of a very fun movie to make that I don't think I've ever even watched. But on site, you know it's going to be a fun one to make fun of, especially with Tim Dillon. DanSoder.com. Go get tickets for Netflix is a joke. The movie watch along. It's going to be fun. Not a giant place. You know, just a couple hundred of us watching a shitty movie while Tim and I, and maybe a special guest, make fun of it. There's a lot of people in town. I might be having friends coming over just to sit down and make fun of shit. Because that's what you should do, right? Is make fun of the world. DanSoder.com for tickets.
Rolling, baby.
You're doing that Blue Note show.
Yeah.
I saw that picture with Shane. I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, dude.
That's what's going on, dude. I love that you're doing that. Are you doing it like as a residency?
Yeah.
That's fucking sick.
We're doing like I guess it's
we just start recording.
All together it's like six nights. And we do like two shows a night. We just get like very exploratory.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's what's up. That's what a guy of your caliber of talent should be doing. Not like jingles for gambling sites. Fucking chilling at the Blue Note.
I'm not above that.
You though. Go, DraftKings, yeah. And just wailing. And you're like, damn, dude, it's that DraftKings lick that got me hooked.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. But that, how do you, like the Blue Note is one of those places in New York City where it's like a legendary venue.
Yeah.
Like people, musicians talk about it. I know the musicians at like the Cellar in the Village Underground are like, oh, Blue Note's the shit. Mm. Was it you or them that was like, hey, I want to come do a run there?
So the way this all kind of started, so Chris Dave is Rick Rubin's favorite drummer, which right. is like a crazy
it's a cool-ass credit.
Stat, you know? And he's like,
I'd lead with that if I were him.
Yeah. You should make a t-shirt, like Rick Rubin's favorite drummer.
I'm Rick Rubin's favorite drummer.
Like, you know, Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top has business cards that say friend of Eric Clapton.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Which are pretty sick.
If I were him, my business card would just go, how, how. That would be my business card. I go, Billy Gibbons, how, how, how.
That'd be a good business card.
Yeah.
We did the record together, this record called Mood Swings.
Which is great. Check it out. By the way, I don't do proper introductions. They get mad at me.
Hello. This is
go listen to Marcus King. Go listen to every single thing Marcus King has done. Because I'm telling you right now.
Go listen to Son of a Gary.
Yeah. Marcus King is an elite performer. Singer, guitar player, unfucking believable. Will melt your face. Just go watch him. Shout out to Dean Del Rey, who put me on the Marcus King band early, 2017, 18?
Yeah.
Around there. It's killer.
Yes, I mean, it's unfathomable, really.
You guys are killer.
And I listened and I was like, that is how I would rate it. I listened and I sat back and I went, killer.
I went and hung out with Dean last time I was in LA for the Grammy Week stuff. He does this tribute to Bon Scott every year.
I saw clips from
it. Yeah.
What a lineup.
Crazy. He gets all these motherfuckers out there like, Homie was out there, so I got to hang out with him.
What did you do, Night Stalker? What Bon Scott song did you do? Yeah.
Josh sang it. I forget.
Yeah, I think it was, look it up. They did like, dude, but I don't know if you saw the clip of him and Dean talking about it. I mean, as a huge Queens of the Stone Age fan, Homie put you over.
That's my boy.
He was like, that motherfucker plugged in on a guitar that they found backstage and ripped. It's one of my favorite things are watching guys that I love talk about guys that they love, which does sound very gay. But
Night Prowler.
What is it?
Night Prowler.
Yeah, Night Prowler. Night Rider. What
the fuck? Which is like a deep cut. Because Dean was like, yeah, we got the notes last year. We did a lot of hits. We're going to do a lot of deep cuts.
You got a good Dean Del Rey.
Well, he went on the road with me.
I know.
For a year.
That was the first time I met you was when you were on the road and you came into the Bonfire and did some live songs. And you're like, I'm on the road with Dean Del Rey. And that's why I was like, I showed you my favorite character, which is Detective Dean Del Rey, which is, I think he's the killer. Yeah.
But I love Dean so much, but I have noticed, like, I think he says killer less now.
Because of
it's kind of like how Eddie Murphy changed his laugh.
Which I completely get. I stopped doing Macho Man a lot when people are like, do Macho Man. You're like, I don't want to do it that much. But so I get it. I say we sign a petition for Dean Del Rey to bring back Killer because I liked it.
Bring it back.
Bring it back, baby. Yeah. Dust it off.
He's one of the most confident people, and I love that about him. It's like we took him on the road and like doing comedy, like Big J knows this because he went out with Korn and stuff. Yeah. So like it's hard doing a comedy set for a group of people there for music.
Well, because it almost feels like they're getting an announcement.
Yes.
I don't think they lock in the way they do when you're sitting down watching a comedy show. When you're standing around and a guy comes out and goes, how you doing? Yeah. They expect you to go, so there's been a fire. That's what
they're on edge.
Yeah. That's what it is. They want music.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the inverse, because back in the day, like Eddie Murphy's, I think it's Raw. Mm-hmm. They had
the Bus Boys.
Yeah. He had a band open for him. Mm-hmm. So do you think that works easier? Music first?
I think it makes sense. I mean, I'd be curious to know like what Shane's experience was because he did that with Zach Bryan.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like 80,000 people.
Yeah, he told me he was like, I'm just going up there. I'm going to go for a little bit, see how it goes, then I'm out.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you got to go. It's almost like a heist. You're like, how many laughs can I grab? Big J is a different animal.
Yeah.
Because Big J told me that once he got the cameramen on his side when he was opening for Korn, it brought the show to him.
Okay.
Where he would like point people out and he'd be like, look at this fucking guy. And then they go to him. And so the guy's up on the screen.
Yeah.
And then Jay's being Jay and just being hilarious. And it's like.
And I mean, he is one of my favorite comedians and you are as well. Like, I went to see Jay the other night and like his. Crowd work is just, it's like watching like a jazz musician.
Yeah, it's very unfair.
Yeah.
That Big J gets compared to modern crowd work.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like
leaps and bounds.
It's like me comparing you to like a boy band that learned how to play a song from the record label. Like they're not actual guitarists. You're like, that's not real guitar. You're just watching them mimic. Because I've watched Big J over 20 years. I've watched hours of him do crowd work. And it's great watching him get to a place where you go, he's going to open him up. Like a boxer. It's like he like walks, gets him into a corner, cuts off the ring. And you're like, they can't go anywhere. They got to answer it. And also what I like about it is, as someone that doesn't do crowd work and just does bits, it's so like you watch and it's refreshing because you go, damn, I wish I could just be that. Like it helps me be looser, but I also appreciate it because I'm like, you're seeing a different show every time.
True.
Like those comedy club waitresses, they're listening to a different show every time, which is fucking awesome.
I know. I mean.
Is that what the Blue Note kind of was for you? Is like, let me go in there.
Yeah. I mean. We kind of have these vehicles, which are kind of like, you know, I'm sure Jay has like a few bits in his back pocket. Like if it's a really shitty crowd, like you can kind of fall back on some material. That's kind of how it is at the Blue Note.
So you guys have like a song. If you're like, hey, if I'm not feeling this shit, how do you audible into that? Is it just like, can the, Because you were talking about Rick Rubin's favorite drummer.
Yeah.
And then I fucking went down Chris a path because I'm a ADD pothead. So Chris, Dave, and you were like, hey, let's do a show, just the two of us?
Yeah, well, we talked about doing, you know, some shows together for like 3 years. We talked about it. And then we finally, our buddy Alex Curlin, who runs all the Blue Notes, he was like, do it here. Because Chris kind of does like a residency there because he does a trio with Blake Mills and Pino Palladino. And he works with Robert Glasper a bunch. Like, he had a duo that he does with DJ Jazzy Jeff.
Yeah.
And a tap dancer.
That's crazy.
Just like wild shit.
That's like a real artist.
Yeah.
Where they're like, I can make it work.
Yeah.
And then us were like, I need a 2-drink minimum and decent chicken tenders or I can't get my art off the ground. If you don't have a cocktail named after a dead comedian, I can't do this show. If you don't have the Bernie Mac margarita, I can't go up there. So when you decide to do this show and they go, hey, do it here, for you, is that like wearing sweatpants to work? Do you get to relax and go like, let's have fun and chill?
Like the other night, I wore this.
Yeah.
Like what I'm wearing right now, sweatshirt and sneakers. And I felt really insecure about.
Really?
And I asked my tech with me, I was like, it's okay, I'm wearing sneakers on stage. He's like, yeah
what?
Like, you're sitting on a stool, so yeah,
chill, go for it. What do you usually wear?
I usually, like, my grandfather was a professional musician, and he always said, like, you don't go on stage without a pair of boots on.
Yeah.
And it's like just so a wild concept to him to be not dressed up.
What are you going to marry a black? Yeah. And you go, whoa, holy shit. Grandpa. Grandpa, how do we get from boots to blacks? Yeah.
It's boots to the Dixiecrat party. Yeah.
I remember when I started stand up, they were like, you have to wear, I started in Arizona, and they're like, you have to wear pants. Because one time I came in shorts, it's like 106 out.
Yeah.
And I wore shorts to the comedy club, and the owner was like, you're lucky I don't make you wear a suit. And you're like, all right. So it is that, like, they were a different generation. They were like, I have to wear suits and fucking boots and be gussied up all the time.
My dad was of a similar generation, though, because, like, when he was coming up, he was working with this band down in Fort Lauderdale. And, like, it was all mafia-owned. So he would come in, and they made him, like, dress up.
Yeah.
So he'd wear, like, a blazer with, like, a tuxedo T-shirt.
Hell yeah.
But my dad looked really cool.
Yeah.
If you don't look cool, that can be a little...
Yeah. Annoying.
Annoying to somebody.
I think annoying is the first where it goes. It doesn't go crazy. You go, like,
like, this fucking guy.
Yeah. You just go, fuck.
And all these, like, mafia dudes just... They loved him, but like the bar owner there or the club manager was like, go home and change your fucking shirt right now.
Because he didn't want to get his legs broken.
Yeah, exactly.
The mafia guys were probably like,
they would take my dad out and just like see like how far they could push him. Because my dad would just do like lines of coke from his elbow to his thumb and just like get going crazy. He had this guy he hung out with named Captain Pete that carried a parrot on his shoulder and just like smuggled loads and loads of cocaine into Florida.
And
this be out is, on the this yachts is the 80s.
This is like 80s.
Late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah.
That is pure cut shit.
Yeah, bro.
That's where our parents were of a different generation. Mm-hmm. These baby boomers got to do pure cut cocaine.
Yeah.
They got that Colombian shit that was like, dude, I remember my mom, I think I've told the story before, but she let it slip because my parents used to live in San Francisco in the 70s. So they were fucking partying.
They were about it.
They were about it. And my mom just one time went, one time we got some coke so good, your dad wanted to go out dancing. And I went, damn. I think I was like a teenager and I was like, yeah, what? Like, repeat it. She's like, we used to have this pen jar. Mm-hmm. My mom's like worked at an insurance company. She was like a, you know, single mom, but like an 80s mom. Murphy Brown shoulder pads.
I love it.
We had a pen jar next to our kitchen phone. Mm-hmm. And one time I'm like spinning it around when I'm on the phone with someone. And it spins all the way around and it said dope on it. But I didn't put it together. I was a kid and I went, oh, like cool.
Like cool.
Like cool. And then I grew up and, you know, I was like smoking weed in the house by the time I was 16. And I was like, yo, was that dope jar? And my mom like didn't even not look away from the news. She goes, yeah, it was my dope jar in San Francisco. And I was like, what happened to that? She's like, I think I sold it at a garage sale. You're like, no.
Hell yeah, Trish.
Yeah, dude. Trisha, she gave me her joint carrier from the 60s.
Oh, man.
She was like, hey, you want to, I'll show
yeah,
you.
Yeah, let me see it.
Square. If you're running a business, man, that's tough. It's hard, you know, like where do you start? Where do you go to? But guess what? Square is the platform behind the scenes of a lot of businesses that you already love. Your hairdresser, that smoothie place that's independently operated that's by you. They're probably using Square. I promise you this isn't a point of sale, but Square includes hardware that works in person and on the go, software for managing staff, marketing, and customer insights, and banking tools like Square Checking to get paid instantly. Because it makes running a business feel a little less like putting out fires, Square simplifies the messy stuff. So go check it out. If you need it, they accept every major payment method, Tap, Chip, Apple Pay, online. They let you see sales and inventory in real time across every channel. So if you're starting a business or running one that deserves better tools, Square helps you sell, manage, and grow without slowing down. Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/soder. That's square.com/go/soder. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today. ZocDoc. Oh, man. Whenever you're worried and you got to go see a doctor, that can bring the worry to a tenfold because you're like, I don't know who to go see. Who the hell deals with this? Well, that's why you download ZocDoc. It's a free app or a website if you're on your computer that helps you find and book high-quality in-network doctors so you can find someone you love. We're talking about booking in-network appointments with more than 150,000 providers across all 50 states. View thousands of verified patient reviews to make sure you're going to see the right person. You know, maybe they hate small talk just as much as you do, or you love it just as much as I do. And you, or you have the same sports team. Whatever it is, you can feel confident that you book with a doctor you know you'll love. When you're ready, you can see them, their real-time availability, and click to book instantly. No phone tag, no waiting around. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments. Go to ZocDoc.com/soder to find and instantly book a doctor you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/soder. ZocDoc.com/soder. Thanks, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this message.
I got my dad's hash pipe from the 70s. Oh, wow.
Isn't that cool?
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. Look how tiny their joints were.
Yeah, dude. They'd roll up some pinners.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's incredible.
I can't even fit modern fucking joints into this, but this is...
That's great.
She found that shit, and she's like, do you want my joint carrier? And I was like, hell fucking yeah. You can't even, like... Look at that. It's got the thing for the papers.
I could make it work.
You want it?
No. Please. Dude, you got
to
use it.
I do have to... You know what? I have to learn how to roll joints.
I'll stock you up. I use these things. They're called King Palm Rollies.
Okay.
And it's like... Dan Auerbach put me onto them.
Hell yeah.
And basically... They're made out of palm leaves, and you just, like, stuff your weed down in them.
Get that all day. I could stuff.
They look like little cigars.
Yes.
And they'd fit in there perfect.
Let's go. I think we just found a new sponsor, Pimp.
This podcast brought to you by King Palm Rollies.
Hey, King Palm Rolls. Get them now. And then just watch me show up with, like, six boxes.
Yeah.
They're like, I fucking... So when you do, like, the thing that... When did you... First off, when you see Marcus King play, you go, oh, you were born with a guitar in your hand, what it feels like. Did you start playing since, how old were you when you started playing guitar?
Man, I really was like 2 or 3 years old. Like, as soon as I could, like before I could walk, I was playing a guitar. Like,
oh shit.
But I had like a really lonely childhood.
Shout out, dude.
Yeah.
What's up, brother?
Pretty rough childhood.
You think so. I learned how to do voices because I had friends?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, I quote you all the time in all my interviews is like, you think I'm going around from city to city begging for people's like approval because shit went well?
Yeah, dude. There and people don't understand it's like a true gift and a curse of like when you have that and you get the motivation to go make stuff that'll bring people in to like enjoy.
Yeah.
There's a carbon dioxide that comes with that. There's like a heavy, like that's the oxygen, but then you got to breathe some shit out. And if you don't take care of that, that's what I tell all my friends, like that I as I watch my friends like Shane and Nate and all these people get like really, really big. I'm always like, dude, let me know what your carbon dioxide is. Let's let's get that breath out of you because you got to keep breathing. But that means breathing in and breathing out, you know?
I mean, it does. I mean, speaking of that, like another thing you said that I resonated with was like the crossover between like I played with G.I. Joes and Army Men.
Hell yeah.
And my wrestlers till I was like 12 or 13.
Shout out, dude.
But started smoking when I was like 11 or 12.
I mean, did you? Yeah, you had a dad that had a friend named Captain Pete.
Yeah.
My dad's friend's name was Jim. He wasn't a captain of shit, but he would build these fucking motorized ducks that they would put in the lake.
Yeah.
And he'd try to get them over 100 miles an hour. Jim was insane.
That's sick.
Sawed off shotgun under his couch when he lived with my dad.
Oh,
one
yeah.
One time I was laying on the couch watching TV, and you know when you're just like little and you just like run your hand along the carpet, and I put my hand under and I was like, you, and I like knocked it out. And I was like,
I found a penthouse like that when I was a kid.
Yeah, dude, little fucking, your little fingers just brush up against something. You go, what the fuck is
I
this?
I had like one of those like little spaz moments, you know, when you just, you have so many emotions. You're just like, and I had to go to the bathroom and just like sit down. And I sat on the ground and like, I saw under like the vanity where the heat comes out. I
was like,
what is that? Because I had older stepbrothers.
Yes.
And I was like, penthouse, what is this?
Yeah, penthouses, by the way. That ain't the starter kit.
No, it's not.
That's when you see a pussy for the first time and you go, what is this, a surgeon's magazine? You like look around and you go, I'm not trying to see a fucking open wound.
Yeah.
The first time, and this is crazy, and ladies, you know this is true, but the first time you see a vagina, you go, what the fuck? You don't realize it's the coolest thing on the planet.
Uh-huh.
It's the coolest thing on earth. You're like, you go, whoa. And then you go, Chappelle used to have that great bit about, it's the only one, it only satisfies one sense the most, which is feel.
Yeah.
He goes, because it doesn't look good, it smells terrible. And he like goes through all the senses and he goes, but it feels incredible. And he's like, really does. But it's also funny when you're a kid, it's like that discovery thing. And by the way, I said shot, it was a pump handle shotgun. That's what it was. There because I felt the pump handle and then I pulled it out. And as a kid, a 90s kid, you're like, yo, this is sick. Thank God I was an only child.
That's the first gun I ever bought.
It was a pump shotgun? Pump
like shotgun? 6 years ago.
Sick.
I had just gotten my own place in Nashville, and I saw, like, you know, on the news, like, you know, saw some crazy shit on the news, and I was like, I think I should have a gun in my house.
Yeah.
And, like, being in Nashville, they're like, they put your name in a little thing, and they're like, here you go.
Dude.
And you just walk out with it in no case. I'm like, am I allowed to do this?
It's really funny when you buy a gun, because I was with my roommate when he bought a gun at a gun show in Arizona. And in Arizona, all they do is high-five you, and they just give you the gun. They go, you got the cash? You go, there you go. You're a gun owner. And they fucking gave him a nine, and he's like, all right. It's a shitty-ass nine, too. But it is, I think that is, you know, Katie will probably see this, and we'll have to have a conversation about this. But when we get a house, I'm getting a gun.
Yeah.
I love guns.
That's why they say, like, when you get a generator, you got to get a gun.
Yeah, because what happens if someone comes for that generator?
Exactly.
You think pleases and thank yous are going to let it be left?
Exactly.
You just brandish the thing and you go, whoa!
Yeah, that's why I wanted to.
Yeah, dude, there ain't nothing cool. The only thing with guns that comes close to that is the slide going back. But the main one, the one that fucking kicks you in your taint is the fucking. Did you go to a range or like, it's Nashville.
Never been fired.
Never been fired.
The gun's never been fired. I mean, I've shot guns before, but like that one that I got for my home, like,
yeah,
I just luckily have never had to use it.
Thank God.
Or grab it or anything.
Yeah. It is one of those ones where if you use it, it's the best bet.
Yeah.
Because you go, well, it sprays.
So like, did you ever see that interview with Sturgill Simpson on Rogan? He was talking about, he's got like an assault rifle. And this guy had broken into his house in East Nashville, and like he came down the stairs like
Rainbow Six style.
And the dude, and the dude just looks up and sees Sturgill Simpson and his tidy white. He's pointing an assault rifle at him.
Yeah,
and he just left.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Also, Sturgill Simpson has the face of a Navy SEAL.
Yes, he does.
He like if you saw that face, he looks a lot like my mom's dad. He looks a lot like my grandfather.
He looks like a Civil War soldier.
Yes, he does.
He's got that face.
Yes, he does. In football, I call that World War One face. Brock Purdy has it for the 49ers.
Yeah.
Famous catcher of the San Francisco Giants, Buster Posey.
Okay.
They look like guys that got shot down over Europe in like 1916.
Just faces that you don't see anymore.
Yeah.
They're all in Kentucky.
Yes. Well, Sturgill's from Kentucky. Where's he? Dude.
Tyler Childers has the same vibe.
You two are my guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and Sturgill are guys that like keep it. You, Sturgill, Homie, There's guys that I listen to that just keep evolving with music. And you know what it is? And I think this is because you're all stylistically very different. You guys all play like you love music.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, we're in an era where that's lost in everything. Like, I'm watching comedians who don't like comedy. I'm watching chefs that don't want to cook.
Yeah.
You're watching musicians that don't want to play, but they're doing it because they're making more money than they've ever made. So why would they turn it off? And you go, but that's not why we're doing this shit.
Sure.
You know, it's like you were playing a guitar before you could fucking walk.
And I have a great reverence for the art.
Was that hard growing up with a third generation musician? Was there moments where you're like, do I want to do this?
I never had any doubt, man. I knew that it was gonna be my profession one way or another. My grandfather, I mean, he was a career military man, and he just played on the weekends. So I knew, like, at the very least, I could do that.
Yeah.
I could work a straight job and then play on the weekends, and I could at least make a living doing that. But I always strived to do more, and I just always wanted to play. So,
what was your first moment of? Because you're around all these professional musicians, you know, whether it's your dad or even your grandfather playing on the weekends. When was the moment where someone that you respected as a musician saw you play and went like, holy shit? Because, I mean, you're just doing magic, and I'm a simple man. Like, you could play a three-chord song, and I'd be like, bah, bah, bah. But I'm talking about a guy that where you felt, I guess, you know, there's not a better way to say it, like, seen. Like, where you were like, yeah, I can fucking play this shit.
I mean, I was really lucky. I had really good friends in the business that were like local legends that played on the weekends, and they would need guitar players, and they would let me come out, and I would just do it, you know, for pocket change, you know, because I just wanted the experience. I got my learner's permit when I was 14, and I started, you know, and I had my dad's old minivan,
yeah,
Pontiac Transport 94, yeah, baby. And then in that van,
it does make me feel old because I go, that's still a new car. I was 11 with 94. That's a great car.
I mean, at the time it was relatively new, I guess.
No, so, but you're like driving around 14, man, the South, they just let you fuck. They go,
they just, yeah.
They go, can you tie your own shoes? You can drive a car. Here's a cigarette.
Yeah.
And then you go to the Pacific Northwest and they go, you're 19 years old. I don't know if you should ride in the front seat.
A little coddling.
Yeah.
But that's how it was. Like, hell, when I came up here, like in South Carolina, again, like you can buy an enclosed trailer without a title, without anything.
Yeah.
You don't have to put a tag on it. If the lights are working, you're good. And we drove it up here and we accidentally went on a parkway. This is when I was like 18. And we accidentally went on a parkway and they pulled us over and they're like, you got a title registration for your trailer. There's no tag on it. And we're like, what?
What are you talking about with your rules?
It was in Yonkers.
And buddy, they're just itching for something.
Yeah, dude. They saw us coming, man. They impounded it. We never got it back.
You never got it back?
We went over. All our gear was in it. We went over and we were like, hey, you know, like, can we at least get our gear out of it? And they were like, you got to pay us at least half the impound rate or whatever. So we had to figure out how to find $500.
Fuck.
Because like $500 at that time, we were like, what are we going to fucking do?
Yeah, you're almost going, we might as well just buy new equipment.
Exactly.
Just $500 is a king's ransom.
Yeah. So we went in. I called my stepmom who worked at the courthouse. She was a clerk of court. And she went in, or she called them and like gave them the riot act, you know. And I went back over there because before that I went in and I was like, all right, we got the half of the money. Here you go. He was like, yeah, I lied.
Yeah, dude, let me tell you something.
And that's what I was like. I hate New York.
Yeah, let me tell you something about New Yorkers. That's a superpower that they have.
It was sick.
Where they go, hey, you want the parkway? You going north or south?
Yeah.
They go, south, that's $750.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do about that. You go, you just said it was $500. They go,
yeah.
I know, it's crazy. You asked that 15 minutes ago and it changed. It's like when I moved here, like the little things with the moving goalposts, especially trying to find an apartment and shit. Mm-hmm. Like I moved into that place in Queens with just cash. And the guy was like, you cool not signing a lease? And I was like, I mean, you're going to kick me out? He goes, I'll give you a month.
Yeah.
I lived in that apartment for 15 years.
Whoa.
Never signed a lease.
That's awesome.
Month to month for 50. He increased it once, but he never fixed anything.
Damn.
You can ask comics. In my kitchen, me and Vecchione lived together. We had a leaky pipe, and it folded under our kitchen. So there was a ramp in our kitchen. You know how many comics I know that twisted their ankle going to get a glass of water? And they're like, dude, you got to say something. I go, dude, you got to hit it with speed. That's what I always say. You got to hit that thing with speed and hope you fucking launch, dude. Yeah. So back to the smoking while playing with action figures.
Yeah.
Because I love meeting a kindred spirit like that. At what age did you put down the action figures? Because I was maybe 13, but like knew I had to put them away.
I'm about the same. I think I just got too busy, like, working.
That's where you start going, like, you're doing real shit.
I don't have time for my hobbies anymore.
I know. And you go, dude, my hobbies are setting up epic battles.
And I did, too.
Yeah, dude, good luck. All I know is if you were drinking with my mom in the 90s, I'm sorry that the staircase was littered. Because that staircase, for kids that can't afford the aircraft carriers or whatever, the stairs are the best. It's a mountain range.
Stairs, cupboard, like with like the wire, like, because I have a kung fu grip, so
they
can grip onto the wire, like shelving.
Oh, yeah, dude. My stepdad's garage, he would step on G.I. Joes all the time and be like, God damn it. You'd be like, he was hiding out.
Yeah.
He was hiding out.
My stepdad was fucking crazy, bro.
Really?
My stepdad, like.
When did your parents break up?
When I was like four.
Okay.
Four and a half, five.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
So when, because that is an age where you have like no memories of them being together.
The memories I have of them being together are bad.
Really?
Yeah. Like that, just screaming in each other's faces.
Are you the only, are you their only child?
Me and my sister.
Okay. So Holly. You had the two of them. Yeah. So with your sister, you had someone to go like, you know, this is fucking.
You believe this shit?
This fucking, these people are crazy. I always think that's weird with where we're very similar. Something I could never connect with my friends who had parents that they saw them love each other.
It's insane.
It's insane to me.
My wife's like that. Like,
really? Where she's just like, they parents, just love each other and they're just there and you go.
Like no. When I come across that, it's like a psychological experiment. I got to find who the fuck up is in the family. So like the whole Christmas, I'm like.
Yeah. Someone gets a little too drunk and you go, we have a front runner.
Yeah, like, front runner. They're not serving here and you.
Yeah. How did you get that? Yeah,
exactly.
How did you go outside?
Yeah.
Should you take a walk? Yeah.
Or they'll be like, just make sure, like, you know, hide your stuff.
Yeah. That I'm was. Like,
why?
Who wants it?
I'm like, is there somebody snooping when they go to the bathroom? And they're like, just hide it.
If you could, just maybe, I don't know, tuck it up in the heat vent. You go, so you have someone here with a real problem.
That's what I'm saying.
That was, as I got older, I started becoming more comfortable gravitating to my people, my family that would get fucked up.
Yeah.
Because I'd go, everyone else was like, hi, how are you? And then, you know, you got a cousin or an aunt or uncle outside smoking weed. And you're like, can I come hang?
Yeah.
That was immediately who I vibed with.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was. You don't see, like, dude, my parents hated each other my whole life. And it took... I was in my 30s. My mom and I were in San Francisco, and she hadn't been back since like the 80s. And we were out there because she was helping me with my dad's mom's birthday party. And she was like, I'll fly out there with you. They had a good relationship. So I was like, you can help me with the birthday party because I can't do it by myself.
Yeah.
My grandma was turning 90. She's like, yeah, I got it. And we're driving through San Francisco, and my mom just like gets emotional out of nowhere. And I was like, you all right? She's like, last time I was driving down the street was like 1981 with your father, and we were like so in love. And I was like, and I came back and I told my therapist, I was like, it was the first time I've ever seen a glimpse of my parents being in love.
Wow.
Of being like, fuck, I love that dude. And he's been dead almost 30 years. So you're like, that's crazy to me that people like you and I, it's like not ever drinking water.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, what was it like when you had your first sip of water? You go, kind of hurt my throat. I didn't really like it.
Right.
Because I'm not used to it.
Yeah.
And then you grow up and you're supposed to have these relationships and you're like, but I don't have any, I don't have a manual to go off of. I think that's what people don't realize children of divorce don't have.
Yeah.
They don't have the manual to go like, all right, this is how you act.
Which I think in some ways we're favorable in that way.
Yeah.
Because it's like when you don't have credit, They're like, exactly. The bad news is you don't have any credit.
Yeah.
The good news is you don't have bad credit.
Exactly. You That's know? A fucking great way of putting that. You go, you're not going to fuck that. You don't, because there are marriages that sour that it's almost better that, you, like, I always really respected the fact that my mom, even though she got divorced from my stepdad, I respected the fact that she was like, this ain't working for me.
Yeah, if you're unhappy, fucking.
And I think that saved me from getting locked down into a lot of relationships that weren't probably good that I didn't realize. Because it was like, oh, that was the manual I got. Where I was like, oh, there's an eject button.
Yeah.
My mom's like, here's a strap. Pull this shit. You'll shoot straight up.
I never knew about the eject button. I, you know, like my attachment style, all that. I mean, because I research all this stuff now.
Mm-hmm. Which is good as you get older and also is with a very fucking public life.
Right. And again, it's because I had like two or three relationships, like real relationships with like women that I probably would have married if I was just a terrible partner, just a real problem.
Yeah.
And just like you said, you know, like calls coming from inside the house.
Oh, dude, when you realize that, where you go like, fuck, they're so, and I would never want to disturb their peace now that we're done. But I always thought there's like, there's a lot of my exes that if I ever bumped into, I'd give them some knuckle and go, my bad.
Hey. Come here.
Sorry. Let's bring it in. Hey, sorry about that.
That's on me.
Couldn't take in the emotions.
I just write about it, dude.
Stop overpaying for your wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at just $15 a month. That's like one pack of cigarettes. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered with the nation's largest 5G network. Bring your own phone and number, activate with an eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle, just a very affordable plan. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/soder. That's mintmobile.com/soder. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. Oh, the seasons are changing. It's getting hot. You know what that means? Almost pool time. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I'm going to cannonball in. And if you know me, you know whenever I jump into a pool, all the boogers that I've had in my nose since the last time I've been in a pool come out when I pop out of the water. That was too much information. But I'll tell you what I will be swimming in, and that's my Chubbies swim trunks. I love them. It's just so fun. The trunks are supportive, comfortable, designed to say, see you never, to chafe. Honestly, I got a pair of 49er ones, and yeah, they show a lot of thigh, but I love them. I love swimming in my chubby trunks, but that sounded fun. Engineered with four-way stretch fabric to handle swimming laps just as well as it handles lounging poolside. They fit like you've had them for ages. From the first time you put them on. Same iconic fit, same comfort, first design, and same easygoing vibe that built the brand. For a limited time, Chubbies has given our listeners 20% off with the code Dan Soder, full name, at chubbiesshorts.com. Chubbiesshorts.com. That's 20% off your order with code Dan Soder. That's my full name. Give your thighs the VIP treatment they deserve with Chubbies. Support our show and tell them that we sent you. But that's what I love about your music, is it's very personal in a way that doesn't feel exploit. You don't exploit your personal life, but you do what I think good artists do, which is intake and then have like an alchemy where out comes great shit.
Yeah.
You know, like the worst example of it is when everyone wanted Adele to go through a breakup every album and you're like, maybe don't make her.
Yeah.
Maybe enjoy the next thing. But that's what I do love about specifically you with the Marcus King band and you doing your solo stuff and then going and working on other stuff is the way that I feel about Sturgill doing what he does and then going doing Johnny Blue Skies or Hami doing Queens and then them Crooked Vultures or producing fucking Arctic Monkeys. You know what I mean? It's like you're moving and changing. I like an artist that I can... that it takes me a second to catch up to their next album. Because I go, well, they're different people. That's what I think good stand-up specials are, too.
Sure.
Where you go, oh, I'm seeing a different part of his life. Maybe a point he's making now he wouldn't have made 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's all perspective.
Exactly.
And just evolving with the craft. And
but the patience, I think where you get a good fan base is where you install a patience with people, your fans, to go, hey, I'm growing too.
Make them a fan of you.
Yeah. And then just go, hey, because I, you know, there's Queens of the Stone Age fans that I see that go like, no, man, I want to play in that 2002 desert rock. And you go, but that they were fucking 28-year-old guys.
Right.
Now they're breaching 50.
Yeah.
Like, you want them to be, I don't want that. Yeah. I don't want people to, you know what I mean? Don't stay sexy. Yeah. I want you to, you can stay sexy, but stay sexy in your own way.
In a, you know, a grown-up way.
In a grown-up way. I just feel like a lot of entertainment now doesn't make room for that. So that's why I love seeing when you go to the Blue Note and you go, I'm going to fuck around with a drummer.
Yeah.
Is it the drummer? Is it him? Is it Chris the reason that you can trust it? Because you go, I know this guy will always, like almost like a safety net, like he'll catch you.
You got to have that. And I mean, I have that with my band too, the Marcus King Band. My drummer and I, Jack, we've worked together for like almost 15 years. So, you know, you got to have people that you can trust.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, those are the strongest relationships I've ever built in my life or other musicians. So like,
well, they understand you more.
Yeah.
They understand that, you know, I think it's not that non-musicians can't understand your life. But it's what we were saying. It's perspective. Mm-hmm. It's like you don't know what it's like to live in a van and travel and be on the fucking Cross Bronx Expressway and get your shit jacked because a guy goes, the fuck is this?
Yeah.
The fucking van with a trailer? You don't know what it is. You can go like, yeah, police can be mean. And you're like, motherfucker, not if they take your gear.
Yep.
It's beyond mean. It's cruel.
It is cruel.
So you have that. So you feel like you have that with Chris?
I do, man. Like, just as soon as we met, it was like, it was me and my, you know, Briley, my wife now, like it was our like third date. I had met her and I flew her out to LA where we were recording, and Chris, his wife was pregnant. So she was there and they connected.
Great.
And the four of us just became really close and just, I don't know, some people you just meet and you're just like immediately just like, you know.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Friendship fucking rules. Because when you vibe with somebody and then you go like, oh shit,
keep doing this.
It's interesting because you really do like feel like a child, like of like, do you want to sleep over?
Yeah, exactly.
You want to ask him that? You're like, do you love movies? Yeah. I love movies. I want to play it. Like, it is like, I remember the first time I worked with Shane. Literally, he's like emceeing at Helium, and I was headlining. It was like a Thursday night. I didn't have anything to do, and I'm just in the green room. I'm like, well, I brought my PlayStation. I'm going to play Madden. He's like, I love Madden.
Yeah.
And then I'm not joking. He came to the hotel. We played Madden all night, and I couldn't find weed.
Yeah.
And he was like, my boy makes edibles, and it was McCusker. McCusker made his own gummies, and he brought me a thing of gummies, and he's like, you should put these in the refrigerator. I don't know how strong they can get. That was what he said, and I ate one, and it fucking fucked me up.
I love Matt.
Yeah, dude.
The whole McCusker clan is...
They're great.
Great.
I just hung out with Billy in Pennsylvania when I went down.
Billy's
with,
a wild
with
man.
Shane. Billy's the fucking man. War mode. I've been like telling Billy, I'm like, I need a war mode shirt. I need the Val Kilmer war mode shirt. And he's like, dude, we'll get you.
He sent me a hat.
Yeah, the hats are sick.
Good hats.
War mode might have the best merch in the podcast game.
Low key,
but be fucking quiet. Don't tip anybody off.
Yeah.
Because I don't want their shit getting stricken. I want that fucking heat shirt.
It's heat.
That war mode fucking heat shirt's what's up. But I do agree. You like meet people and you go like, that was my favorite part of moving to New York with stand-up was kind of like that. Like the way that musicians vibe. It was like meeting people doing shitty mics, doing shitty bar shows. But you're like, oh, dude. Like Joe List and I just immediately were like,
love Joe List.
Yeah, yeah. We were both obsessed. I remember the thing that linked us. We were both obsessed with the Jerry Seinfeld documentary Comedian. And he was like, Comedian. I was like, dude, that's one of the reasons I moved here. Wow. And he was like, oh, fuck. And then we just quoted at each other. And you're like, oh, we got similar shit. And then he would put me on. He would argue about the Celtics being the greatest team of all time. He'd be like, you never watched the 1984? And he'd like go to his apartment and we'd just be drunk watching.
He's passionate.
Yeah, and that's what I love.
Yeah.
As I think a lot of the times, you know, I don't know how it is about the music industry, but with stand-up, you just meet people that you go, you don't really like this shit, and it bums you out.
It is. It's a bummer.
Yeah, because you go, fuck, you're just a hooker.
It is the most, I mean, you're offering somebody something that it's deeply spiritual and just important to other people, and you're just
yeah
giving it out for money.
Yes.
It's disgusting.
It feels the same. There used to be a strip club in Montreal called Super Sex, right? Okay. It was sick. It had a Superman logo. It was fucking awesome. The Joe List. We were up there in 2012. It was both of us still drinking. Joe List was like, let's go get lunch at a strip club. And I was like,
as you do.
As you do. Good deals. Great burger. Good price. I bet
the burger was good.
Wasn't bad. It was actually a pretty good burger. Yeah. And then we got lap dances. And this girl, I just felt, you know, I was one of those guys that would just fall in love with one girl and be like,
yeah,
no,
she loves me.
Yeah. But this girl, I mean, was trying to rub the skin off me.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, I really fucking think like we had some. And so then we do the festival, and I just signed with like a new agency, and the agents get up there on the weekend, and they're like, bro. You know, they're got big bro energy, and they're like, we got to go to the fucking strip club, bro. And I'm getting hammered with them, and I'm like, yeah, hell yeah. It's like Saturday night, so this is like the A-team.
My girl's going to be there.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. Yeah, I was hoping. I go, oh, I wish I could have checked the schedule. Yeah. But
who's on the lineup tonight?
Oh, fuck. I need Rosalind. But we go to Saturday night, and it's packed. I mean, yeah. List and I were there, and there's like 10 people there. And we go, and it's fucking packed. And at the time, I was with CAA, and it's like some agents from CAA, and they're like dropping cards and money. So they get a good table. Whatever. There's this beautiful, not my girl, but just this beautiful girl, stacked. You could tell she was gorgeous. And I was pretty drunk. And I was like, I had a dance. She's like, yeah, you can get a dance. And I remember the feeling of watching her check her phone while giving me a lap dance. That's what it feels like when you find out people are doing stand up for money. Where you go, you just checked your phone.
Yeah.
This is Nickelback. I know how long this song goes. And she was like dancing on me, and her phone was on like a thing, and she went like,
that's
she fucked. Was on me, and I saw her go. Like that, and I went,
ah. It's like when your therapist checks the clock.
Or falls asleep.
You've had him fall asleep?
Yeah, pulled it on me today.
Damn.
Went like this. And I go, no. And he goes, sorry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't fully fallen asleep, but he goes like.
He nods.
He nods. Heroin nods. Straight up heroin
nods. My bass player does heroin nods, but he doesn't do heroin, but he's just like, he can sleep.
Sitting he's just up. A sleepy boy?
Sleepy guy.
Dude, sleepy guys. Dude, you got to watch it. Because sleepy guys, that has to suck to be genuinely a sleepy guy and people to go, he's on heroin.
He's on something.
He's on heroin. Cause
yeah.
Because I've had friends, when they're on heroin, they go, dude, I just didn't sleep last night. And you go, I'm not a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Where it's 3 p.m. and you're going like.
Yeah.
And you're also in a real good mood. You know, I don't think sleepy boys get this good. Usually sleepy boys want to go to sleep. Yeah. Sleepy boys on heroin are like, dude, everything's
sick.
Okay. They're like, no.
That's one that I never touched was
good.
The opiates.
Let's do it, dude. Pinky swear. No opiates. Or else me and you are going to be putting on one hell of a variety show under a highway.
For each other.
I go, Marcus, play me on. Hey, you guys might have seen me eating a handful of shit down the street. just in slacks. Just nothing but just slacks, no underwear. Yeah, man. So, growing up, a child of divorce like that and smoking cigarettes, when you put your action figures away, there is like a retirement ceremony where you go, well,
put the jerseys in the rafters.
Yeah, dude. And then it feels weird because like Big J and I talked about this. When people started sending me like wrestling figures, they like send them to me. There was a quick moment where you just go like, bum, 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 and you go, no, I got nothing.
I lost the touch.
It's like trying to start a car. You go, ying, 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 and you go, nah, I just ain't there. I'd have to get jumped. Or,
man.
It was funny. They sent it, I unboxed it, and I was like,
bow, 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 yeah.
Bow. That's always made Shane laugh. Just the thought of someone sitting there going, bow, 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 bow. Like making the noise. Oh, look out. Or like sitting on your chest, and you're like, yes, motherfucker. Did you ever get caught by your, like, cool friends playing with toys? Like your friends would come over?
Yeah, they'd come over and they'd be like, what is this?
Yeah.
Be like, I don't even know.
Oh, it's for my baby cousin.
Yeah.
My little baby cousin's over here is a little baby.
That definitely happened.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, that's before I knew that I could just own whatever it was.
Man.
And just be like, yeah, that's my shit. I'm into that.
Teach that in middle school.
Yeah.
It's the fucking Colin Quinn bit. about teach kids how to fucking small talk. Teach kids how to own what they like. Because I really feel like that is a message that would hit everybody.
Yeah.
Every race, creed, color, religion. If you just learned when you're 12 years old to go, because I like it.
Yeah.
My sister tried. My older sister tried doing that.
And they do that with like really, really big divisive issues.
Yeah. But it's like, maybe start small.
Yeah.
And then
maybe let's start with.
Maybe we start at an approachable level to where then they can understand who they actually are.
Comic books.
Comic books, toys for horse girls. Keep your horses up, babies.
Dude,
brush that hair.
We all got to be more like horse girls.
Be like horse girls. They love their shit unapologetically.
Unapologetically clomping around this fucking room.
Clomp, dude.
Yeah.
Clomp for your soul.
Yeah, they would do it. And they can do the noises. It's just
and their hair is always braided,
always.
perfectly, dude. Be more of a horse girl.
We all should be.
If we had a good society, we would follow the lead of horse girls.
Well, now there's like there is like adult horse girls now.
Yeah,
that do like, you know, like the stick horse.
Yeah, that might be. That's holding on too.
That's
long.
A different thing.
That's. I would say let's early.
There's a point where we had to let go.
They have to let
they
go.
They got to let go.
Let the horse run away.
Let it go.
Don't put a stick between your legs over the age of 20.
Nope.
Because I can't take you seriously. But a 13-year-old girl that stands 10 toes down for her favorite, she can go horse knowledge all day.
Enjoy it.
Great.
Yeah.
But maybe we let go around 14, 15, 16.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm wondering. You wonder if the shame of what it is in us letting go is what got us evolved. But then you go, I wish I would have just had 10% of that. 10% more to go, those are G.I. Joe extremes. Those fucking rule.
Yeah.
I'm not embarrassed by that.
Absolutely. But there is also like, you know, I have a lot of friends. This maybe says more about me, but I have a lot of friends. Adult friends who are still into wrestling, very into wrestling. You're one of them. My buddy Dwayne Trucks from Widespread Panic.
Yeah.
He loves wrestling. Lemaire, obviously.
I mean, he lives it. That's what all he we talk lives about. It, we like, that's what we talk about exclusively.
You know, so there is a certain point.
But where, there's also a letting go era.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize when I was 18 to 23, I didn't watch it.
You're not emotionally invested.
I can be. I can be. I'll tell you what, I got a little too excited for Brock Lesnar and Obafemi.
Oh, nice.
I was trying to talk about it at the cellar with people, and they were not having it.
I went to a wedding that dude was at. He is Brock? Scary huge.
Yeah, dude. He is legitimately.
Super nice guy.
I mean, he can be.
Yeah.
Because everyone else is afraid of him.
And his wife was with him.
Sable.
Sable?
Yeah, dude.
I was like, hell yeah, what's up, Sable?
What's up, Sable? Thank you. Thank you for pulling it out of me for 7 years. Sable came when I hit puberty, and I was like, oh, this was meant for me.
Yeah.
The Attitude Era with them showing TNA the way they did, I was like, this at an age where you couldn't get porn on your phone, I was like, this fucking rules.
I'll tell you.
And shout out to the Nitro girls. WCW Nitro girls never get the credit.
Hey, I agree.
They did it.
I'll tell you, and it very well could have been a Sable, but for the sake of the story, just that part of you never really dies. You know, like I ordered a Stone Cold Steve Austin poster off of eBay for my gym.
Hell yeah.
And it showed up, it was wrong poster. I think it was Sable or like one of the, you know, WWF like chicks. And I was like, oh, man.
I wanted
like
Stone
a beautiful
Cold.
Woman. Yeah. Like Stone Cold.
Oh, I wanted a bald, tough badass. I didn't want this beautiful babe. Trish Stratus, not today.
Yeah. I was so genuinely bummed out.
And that was the
got
thing.
Immediately back on eBay.
You go, now send me my fucking rattlesnake poster. That was one of the things my mom really made me laugh about when I was on the phone with Stone Cold when we were doing that cartoon with him. And I got off the phone with him, and she was like, man, you were 12 years old again. But I really was. Because you're like talking to him, you're like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm sorry Owen Hart broke your neck. I'm so sorry. I love you so much. But he's just like, all right, hell yeah, man. Just fucking shit, dude.
Hell yeah.
The first time, it's what you're saying, it's still in you.
Yeah.
The first time I heard his voice, first time he popped up when I pitched the show to him, it was during COVID. When he popped up on that Zoom call, I was like, yo.
Yeah.
Like jump scare.
Right.
Same way I felt stand up New York when Chris Rock walked in the first time and I'd saw him in person. I went, holy shit.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, you're like the reason I'm here right now. Mm-hmm. Bigger and blacker. And he was just like, looked around and he's like, yeah. You know? And then, I mean, like with music, do you have that memory of who you were in the room with the first time that you're like, holy shit?
Man, I mean,
like Rick Rubin is one where you go.
I mean, yeah, obviously,
holy
like Rick
shit, created Def Jam.
Yeah, I mean, like walking in the room with Rick, that definitely felt.
Was that at Shangri-La? Did you go to Rick's house?
I went to Shangri-La, and he was doing an interview in the yard with Mike Campbell from the Heartbreakers.
Sick.
And like
sick.
I drove past it. I was like, two of the most like easily identifiable people of all time, sitting and talking to each other. And I just waited in the kitchen, and then he came in and he was just like super stoked. That's the thing I really like about Rick is that he's a fan first, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He works with people he genuinely likes.
Yeah. And he's maintained that for all these years.
Yeah.
He does some, you know.
Well, he's crazy old rich guy.
Also big wrestling fan.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Loves wrestling.
Yeah.
Honestly, I probably think one of my highlights of my life would be able to talk wrestling with Rick Rubin.
Absolutely.
Because he's paid attention to the whole time that you can reference eras and you go, and he's there. Mm-hmm. You'll be watching a SummerSlam and you're like, fucking Rick Rubin.
Yeah.
Right there behind the broadcast booth.
Yeah. Like I send him stuff all the time. Like my boy, Kevin Scott, bass player, he has a trio called the Wednesday Night Titans. I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
But they just play like old wrestling clips.
Yo, I've seen that.
Yeah, they play like jazz fusion over it.
Yo, where have I seen that? I think you might have sent to me after you did the bonfire the first time.
Probably.
I might have talked to Kevin about it.
Yeah, Kevin's the man.
Kevin was with you.
Yeah.
When we did that. Because we were talking about Rocket League. We were going to play Rocket League on PlayStation, and we were talking about...
Yeah.
Fuck, I think he might have said... Because it's cool as shit.
It's so badass.
And that's awesome. They play wrestling in the background while they jam. Yeah. But it's like, they get like AWA clips. They get
they go deep.
They go like NWA Charlotte, like fucking 82 shit. Yeah. Where you're like, damn, that's Tully Anderson.
And Kevin
doing arm
was,
drags.
He was really into wrestling. And Kevin was like a student of Colonel Bruce Hampton, who's like our Southeast, like, and Colonel Bruce was in Sling Blade, you know?
Really?
He was like the rotund guy. It said like the poem.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, in Doyle's apartment or whatever. And he's like, so Colonel Bruce, so now like when I work with Dwight Yoakam, I ask him about Colonel Bruce and stuff.
Yeah,
and
hell yeah.
Colonel was like, everything is wrestling.
Everything is wrestling.
He's like, politics is wrestling.
It is.
Music is wrestling.
It is.
And it's just
putting people over.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it is like, you know, and I've said it a ton of times, but when you're little, be a Hulk Hogan fan. And when you're older, you're a Macho Man fan.
There you go.
Because you realize Macho Man made everyone look like $1 million in the ring. And it was all about like him making the match look as good as possible.
Yeah.
Bret Hart, same way. Mm-hmm. You could put Bret Hart in a ring with anybody. Bruce Pritchard talks about this all the time on his podcast. Put Bret Hart in the ring with anybody, he'd make him look like a fucking world champ.
Yeah.
There's this guy, there's a specific story. I forget the guy's name. They signed him to the WWF at the time. Guy's built like a Greek god, looks good on the mic. They put him in a match. Bret Hart was still part of the Hart Foundation. They put him in a match with Bret Hart, and they're like, we got our next Hulk Hogan. This guy's fucking crazy. And then they put him in a match with someone else, and they're like, this guy fucking sucks. And you're like, it was all Bret Hart.
Right.
That's what led to Bret Hart getting the push, was they were like, oh, shit, this dude is truly amazing at it. But I agree with the Colonel.
Same way in music, too.
Yeah.
You want to play with people who want to make the whole thing elevate.
Yeah.
And when you play with people who are, you know, are occupied with themselves. And
trying to just put themselves over.
Yeah, it's just, it's really disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. So when you're at Rick Rubin's house and he comes in the kitchen and he's just like stoked to see you, is there a part of the back of your brain that you're like, what the fuck is my life right now?
Absolutely. Shortly thereafter, like I mean, that would happen time and time again. But I was working there, and it was during the pandemic, because I met him right before the pandemic hit. And then I went overseas, and I came back, because I had to. And then I just sequestered myself at Shangri-La.
Really?
And they had this guy, Dr. Johnny, who retired after the pandemic, because they had to bring him in every day to give COVID tests to everybody.
Yeah.
And I was working in the chapel, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers were working in the main house. So, like, I would sit and get my COVID test, like, next to Flea and Chad Smith.
That's crazy.
And just, like...
Yeah. Anthony Kiedis is practicing a new, like... Sorry, man, I got to practice. And you go, no, it sounds good. Yeah. You're getting your brain scooped. You're like, no, fucking, that's going to go good on a fucking song. And you go, so you have to have an aneurysm to make those noises? Or how does it work? Do you feel when you're in that situation, you got the Red Hot Chili Peppers in the main house and you're working in the other house, is there a sense of jealousy of like, how much Rick time are they getting? Because I feel like that's where I would go. I'd be like, you didn't even listen to my new riff.
You know, like I saw like when my boy Tyler Childers worked with Rick.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I saw like his footage and I was like, Rick's in the room while the band's playing? Like, he didn't do that for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I sound like such a bitch.
Dude.
I was telling my wife that, and she was like, dude.
Shut up.
It was probably, yeah. He was just that one day. It was probably just for that video. Like, stop being a bitch.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you're right.
That's what I always used to do where I'd be like, Louis C.K. didn't bring me on the road. But and she'd be like, dude, who cares? Katie's like, you don't need to go on the road. You're headlining yourself, and you go, yeah, I know. It'd just be really nice to be asked. I am being a bitch. When you realize that, you go, fuck, I'm being a bitch.
It's a tough one.
Find a good woman to call you a bitch. Yeah. That's what you need.
End of the day, that's what you need.
You need to go, nut up. What the fuck are you talking about? Yep. But not in a way that you take it personally.
It just points out like...
It's perspective. They love you. Yeah. So they're telling you, hey, you're... And again, this is something that I think... is common with people that grew up without parents loving each other, mm-hmm. is that you go, well, I don't think anyone loves me. And you go, they do. You're going back to an old program setting.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Where you're like, fuck, dude, fuck. But I want Rick, because I even you telling me that, I go, I know exactly where my insecurity would lie.
Yep.
That if Rick Rubin wasn't down at the house the whole time going, sitting cross-legged, being like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is better than a Big Show choke slam. I'd be like, yeah, right? I'd be in my own fucking head about it.
I know.
But when you're making the album with Rick Rubin, are there, and you see him, his influence, put his fingers in it, is it the moment where you go like, damn, you're motherfucking Rick Rubin?
There were moments of that. A lot of it was just retrospective and seeing like how much he made me do it myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How much he kind of isolated me to be the one to call the shots.
Yeah.
And how much bad behavior I had to unlearn from having lived at that point, like 2 or 3 years in Nashville at that point, and just trying to construct a hit.
Sure.
Because Rick's
forcing it out
of
you.
Yeah. Rick hates commerce. He hates creating for the sake of people buying it.
I love that.
It's like, you got to create for yourself. But he wouldn't really tell me any of this directly.
That's a good sensei.
Yeah. He was a sensei 100%.
He's just like, no, now you're learning.
Absolutely.
Where you go, I made this. And he's like, finally.
I'm just waxing Rick's car.
Yeah, you go, his car collection can suck my dick. But still, I learned a lot from it.
Yeah
there is, you know, I think there, you do have those people that teach you, like, hey, relax, you're doing it. Mm. You know, Colin Quinn gave me one of my greatest notes of all time. He's basically comedy's Rick Rubin. He really is comedy's Rick Rubin. And there was a moment we were doing a show, and this was fucking 10 years ago in Woodstock. We were doing the Woodstock Comedy Festival, and he watched my set, and he got off stage, and he did he's like, you write all these jokes and you don't perform them. He's like, you just fucking stand there and fucking say your jokes. And he's like, perform them.
Yeah.
You spent the time writing it. You spent the time doing it. Fucking perform the joke. And you're like, damn. And you go to LA and you go, oh, they're all performing their jokes.
Wow.
New York, we just stand there and we go, this is my joke and I wrote my joke.
Yeah.
And then you go to LA and you're like, these motherfuckers are selling.
No, I know. I get the same way, man.
Really?
I go see people. I'm like, yep. And the crowd goes crazy for like I went to a Billy Strings show and like,
yeah,
Billy Strings will
fucking rules.
I mean, he rips and like we started out together. So like.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. We both moved to Nashville around the same time. We were neighbors.
That's sick.
Yeah.
That's fucking sick.
It's kind of one of those things.
You guys have just jammed.
Yeah.
The thought of Marcus King and Billy Strings jamming is just making me go like, the fuck is going on? That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, man.
But you were saying you watch Billy Strings. Like,
yeah, like watching Billy's show, like he knows how to work a crowd.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's the same thing. I talked to my wife about. She's like, yeah, you do just kind of stand there. And I'm like... Well, okay, I'll perform a little more.
You know what's funny is similarly, like we went, this is a couple of years ago, Katie and I went and saw Nate. He was doing this like giant theater in New Jersey and we were watching him. And afterwards we were driving home and I was like, he's so comfortable. And she was like,
yeah,
you could be more comfortable. She's like, take your time with it.
It's a good note.
And you go, shit. And then it is. It's just like from watching someone that you know, that you respect and love. Yeah. And you go, fuck, I could probably use a little of that.
I don't remember who he said it to or who said, somebody was talking about Ron White said, if things are going really well, slow down.
Yeah.
If things are going really bad, slow down.
Yeah.
And I take that advice before every show.
Really? That's, yeah. That is very good. And Ron White's one of the gods. I mean, just like the first time I went down to Austin, he was around the mothership. I had to stop myself from calling him sir.
I do.
Because I love Ron White. He's like, how are you doing? He sat down. I was like, hello, sir.
I know.
You are the only thing worth a shit on the blue collar comedy tour. Like, you want to like say something? You go, you were the Bernie Mac of the white version of Kings of Comedy.
He's so sick.
He is, and it is like, there is a thing that is, and you know what I would say? Everything is wrestling.
Yeah.
Because that's what, when you see celebrities, when they talk about doing the WWE stuff, like Stephen Amell or like the people that have done like real matches, they say Triple H says, fucking slow down.
Yeah.
Take your time more. And you're like, oh yeah, you don't realize it. Because I think that's for anybody in life. Even if you're at a fucking, even if you work in an office and you're like, this can't, I promise you can apply to something. Just take your fucking time and slow down.
Be present.
That's it, man. And that's the hardest shit in the world. That's the reason Buddha achieved nirvana is because he slowed the fuck down and just was there. It was just present and just lived in himself.
I try to apply it to every part of my life, man. Like, if I'm going to a wedding I don't want to go to with my wife, I'm like, I'm going to find somebody here that I can connect with over something.
Yeah.
And like, you'd be surprised. Like, you meet like her friend's like cousin's husband who also doesn't really want to be there, but he microdoses mushrooms. And I'm talking to him about him growing mushrooms in his bathtub. You know,
and then
I'm connecting with somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I went to Katie had her high school reunion up in Boston. And I was there and I connected with all the plus ones.
Yeah.
Because we were like, they did a full class photo and there's like me and three guys and a girl sitting around. I go, are you guys plus ones?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah. And I go, fuck them. You want to get a plus one photo?
There you go. Like,
took a selfie. Like, hey, fuck Framingham High. Like, we're the real stars. No, but shout out Framingham High. Go Flyers. Always. It's fly or die. You know what I mean? Until you die. But yeah, man, I do think, man, in an age of digital isolation where everyone can just be by themselves and make themselves feel crazy, finding that time to slow down and connect with people. You know what I miss is like connecting with like small talk at like grocery stores and shit.
Yeah, it doesn't happen.
Like, I don't miss drinking, but I miss connecting with people through drinking.
I've just gotten to the point where I can go out and really just like, I can have a few Heineken NAs or
shout out Heineken Zero. Thank you for making it taste like Heineken.
It tastes so good.
It tastes just like Heineken.
Or like a Guinness Zero is fucking awesome too.
Give me a club soda with a lime.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like I'm having a little bit of a. I'll go to an airport bar and have a fucking club soda with a lime and end up talking the way that I used to talk when I was doing two shots and a beer.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh fuck, I'm talking to this roofer from Cleveland.
It is.
His dad died.
It's a comfortability thing.
Yeah.
And what I realized is like going out. It's like, I don't have to lower my, like, I mean, you do, but it's because everyone else does. Everybody lowers, the veil has been lowered.
Yeah. And you can do it too. And it is, that's what they said in that book that I used to quit drinking, The Easy Way to Stop Drinking. Is he's like, there's a whole chapter about the social anxiety of stopping drinking. And he goes, you're the same as you were when you were 6 years old and you went to a birthday party. You're scared and nervous for 10 to 15 minutes. And then 30 minutes in, you're playing pool with a guy you just met, and you're like, oh, this is actually fun. I'm, you know, that's how I feel. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, just give it a little bit of time. It's also nice when, like, we went to a wedding and Katie noticed it. She's like, oh, you stay the same intelligence, and everyone drops down, and you go, yeah, and that's when you know it's your time to leave.
Yeah.
When you're seeing people be too stupid, you go, I got to go.
I always tell my wife, it's like, nothing after the second location.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been listening to Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Never fall Of course, Lemon, you never follow a hippie to a second location.
Well, yeah. Well, there's definitely that. I've always followed that.
You know, that was born into my fucking brain. Yeah, I knew, follow a hippie to a second location.
Yep. Because we were at this wedding, and it's like, oh, we're all going to the bar. And it's like, oh, this bar closes at 11. We're going to go to so-and-so's room.
Oh, dude, I'm like, that's where it stops.
That's where I'm out.
Yeah. And your friends... Bert's really cool about that. When I'm on the road with him, he knows I don't want to hit a second location. So he'll get me out to, like, all right, we did the show on the tour, and then we're going to go to this place, like Florida, Alabama.
Yeah.
But you ain't going to get me to the third.
Right.
The next place is where my bed and my Steam Deck is at. So I can go.
I used to do drugs. I would always go to the after party, and then I would end up in, like, an apartment with just, like, a lamp. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, just like
some lawn chairs.
It's just a cat that's not nice to you.
Yeah.
And you go, what are we doing here?
I just like cutting it up on like a Bible.
Yeah, dude. And you go, this isn't where I want to be. When I was drinking, I would like wake up on futons where I'd be like, how the fuck am I on Long Island?
Yeah.
You're like, I got to ride a train back. Dude, I went drinking one time in Denver. This is after I moved away and I came back and I woke up in like an apartment with a guy I went to high school with that I wasn't even close with. And I was like, what the fuck? He was like, you were hammered last night. And you're like, how far away from you? Like trying to find out where my mom's place is. I'm like, how the fuck am I going to get home?
Had a lot of those.
Yeah, but now that's the best part of growing, getting over that. Yeah. Now you go, that's the relief where you go, I never have to have that moment again.
Never have to wake up and be like.
Yeah. Waking up and you go, exactly where I went to bed.
Yeah. You look exactly what I said to that person I don't like.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. It's like, I truly think that's the most refreshing part is like almost finding out everything we've been talking about, whether it's like stuff you want to make or playing with figures and stuff. It's this like ownership that you feel that you go, I don't need to do that anymore. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
There isn't like I'm better than anybody or my life is better. You just go like, this is who I am now.
Yeah.
It's the ownership.
Absolutely.
Horse girl mentality. listen and then buy but listen to everything that Marcus King has ever made, because I promise you he's one of the most talented human beings walking on this planet right now. To watch him play guitar live is truly one of my, like, I've got to do it a couple times. You fucking rip. Look out if he's, how many are you going to do, another one of these Blue Note?
Man, yeah, I'm doing the Blue Note right now, so keep an eye out for that. It's all on my website.
Yeah. MarcusKing.com.
MarcusKingOfficial.com. I got to mention, Waltz Across Texas is happening. We're playing Stagecoach, and then we're just working our way across Texas, baby.
Sick.
We're playing all these old, dance halls and, like, honky-tonks. And
with the Marcus King Band?
Marcus King Band.
That's fucking awesome.
We're trying to do a documentary around it just to, you know, shine some light on these old honky-tonk dance halls like Flores Country Store in Jalotes, Texas, and Green Hall out in Green, Texas.
So if you live in Texas, be on the lookout for that.
Be on the lookout. A lot of people on the Instagram stuff saying there's no Texas dates, but it's its own thing, baby. Yeah.
Which is great. Because they go, no Texas dates? And you go, oh, how about I just give you your own fucking tour? You
get your own thing.
We'll go play in some old school venues.
Yep.
Dude, you're the man. I'm so glad you came by to do this.
Thanks for having me, man.
You're one of the best.